It's a Friday, and that means we have the chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. As always, we're brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. Find out more at bluetailmedicalgroup.com. Great alternative to surgery. The doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf, they will help you stay in the game prior to surgery. There are doctors all over the world that come to Chesterfield, their location, to find out how they're doing it. Find out more before surgery, bluetailmedicalgroup.com. Hey, Ben, great piece this morning. We're going to get into that in just a moment and what you wrote about at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, but good morning to you.
Happy Friday, Dan. Good morning to you as well. Hope you enjoyed the Field of Dreams game last night. That was pretty cool. Hope we see the Cardinals playing in that here in the near future. I was thinking a little bit last night, man, the Cardinals got the short end of the stick on a couple things this past, I guess, year or so. They were supposed to go to London, and they were also supposed to play in the cornfield. I got to think they're going to be on the short list to get those opportunities in the near future, I would hope.
All right, favorite baseball movie, what do you have?
Sandlot, easy. No questions.
Oh, my God.
What? I'm a millennial.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
I got to own it.
Well, you have. I mean, how do you not have Field of Dreams? How do you not have The Natural? How do you not have 8 Men Out?
You didn't say what were my favorites, plural. You said favorite.
Well, I'm giving you all the choices.
No, Sandlot.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you know that I have a pair of, I actually have a legitimate pair of PF Flyers, like the real pair that Benny the Jet Rodriguez wears? I have a pair. I'll wear them to the ballpark next time. I'll show you.
Well, you also have a lot of issues.
That's true.
Let's dive in. You know, so many people reach out at me, and if you're listening to this, reach out on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram and tell us about what you think about what we're talking about here today. But I have so many people reach out to me about our Friday conversations. They love it. So I'm going to dive into what you wrote about today in the Post-Dispatch, which was about the Rams. And it's the connection with the lawsuit issue here in St. Louis and what's going on with the LA Rams. What do you know about it? And kind of educate me and our listeners as to what's the latest.
Sure. And I'll use my usual disclaimer of not being a lawyer, of not being able to read at a level that would require me, be required of me to go to law school. So I try to explain this in very like fundamental ways. And if I butcher something, then someone who's smarter than me can tell me what I got wrong. But here's the way I understand it. And I'll try to relay it as best and as digestible as I can. There was a hearing Wednesday in downtown St. Louis. And really, it was a lot of ground that had been covered before, Dan. And last month, and you and I talked about it at the time, there was a hearing in the case that basically was about the St. Louis side presenting to Judge Christopher McGraw its reasons and its case to request really specific financial information for a bulk of the defendants in this case. And there are a whole lot of them. And the way this works in Missouri law is if you're in a civil suit and you're pursuing a trial, it's nearing a trial, you can request basically a financial profile of the people you are suing in order to, you know, if it reaches the point where you're pursuing punitive damages, you know what to base your claim, your request off of, right? You're not going to ask somebody whose net worth is $10 for $100 million because the money's not there. But you can, you know, request basically finances of the people you have a reasonable case to request if you get to the point of punitive damages so you can have that information. So the St. Louis side was asking for all of this financial information for all of these different defendants. And what they argued, both sides, what they came to find out was, okay, the judge said you can request financial information for the league. You can request it for Stan Kroenke, you can request it for Jerry Jones, and you can request it for these other owners that were part of the Los Angeles committee, the committee that was responsible for figuring out the Los Angeles expansion opportunity. That was last month. Well, Wednesday comes, and the St. Louis side has not received any of that financial information, and there's a disagreement both about whether or not the other side, the Rams side, the NFL side, can take some of those people off the board, and also what specific financial information they have to give if they do have to give it up. So that's what Wednesday was about most importantly. And both sides argued again why they should have it, why they shouldn't. The judge said, no, I'm still going to allow it for the same number of defendants. I'm not going to let you get any more, but let's decide what exactly this financial information is. And this is what is going to make Jerry Jones and Stan Kroenke and Robert Kraft and the other Clark Hunt, the other owners on that committee, start to sweat a little bit, I think. They have to hand over not just their net worth, not just their valuations on their teams. We're talking about tax records going back 3 years. We're talking about personal financial information going back 3 years. We're talking about a list of their businesses and what their businesses have done financially. This is a lot of information, and a lot of wealthy people don't like, understandably, don't like to hand over this information, Dan. And where's this information going? Well, it's going to go to the St. Louis side, and they get to use that to kind of build their case for what they ask for in punitive damages if indeed this reaches trial in January. Now, they shouldn't, under the protective order of the case, the information shouldn't get out. They can't turn it over to the public. However, if it's referenced in hearings, which are public, if it comes out in trial, then all of that information will be available publicly. And if you're Stan Kroenke or Jerry Jones, you can think of a lot of reasons you wouldn't want your financial information out there publicly, you know, for a lot of different reasons, for competition, for people who are bidding against you on things, for folks wondering why you spent that, didn't spend that. And there's reasons to protect that information. So some legal experts have said, look, you cannot, you know, they're not going to give that up, but now they have to. And they would rather settle than give that up. I don't know if that's true, but there is a lot of speculation that maybe this would make the league and Kroenke move more toward the idea of a settlement. Now, that's premature. This thing is still heading toward a January trial. And the other thing that we got to mention here quickly is that the Rams and the NFL are going to have there's going to be another hearing on the 25th. And that's going to be where both sides argue about what is called a summary request for summary judgment. And that's
25th of January.
Of August.
August. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
This month. In a couple weeks, right? They're going to argue the summary judgment, which is the latest request from the Rams and the NFL to get this thing tossed completely. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to work out in their favor, but they have to hear it, and Judge McGraw will have to issue a ruling on that. All previous attempts to get the thing tossed have not worked. The other thing that's worth keeping an eye on is the Rams and the NFL have their side has filed a request for a venue change. And I think they're going to argue that they can't get a fair trial here in St. Louis, which that would be another hearing that is coming later this month, and that will be interesting. And I already the reason I think that is because there was an article recently, Dan, that came out by The Athletic, by Daniel Kaplan, who covers the league, that was kind of raising the questions as if Judge McGraw, who I think has been – well, I'm biased. I want to see Stan Kroenke get pegged for a lot of money. I'll just – put my bias right out there. Everybody knows it. However, it is raising the question as if the judge has been biased in this case, which I think is pretty unfair. And the sports analyst quoted in this, Dan, is of course someone who has done work for Jerry Jones Legends Company, which is the same company that got the contract for the hospitality services for the Rams as soon as they went to Los Angeles. So you're already kind of seeing maybe that line become prominent in the pro NFL circles. And I think that's going to be a discussion here soon. So I know this is pretty in the weeds, but really what this comes down to is a lot of people, wealthy people who don't want to hand over their financial information to anyone, now have to give it in great detail to the St. Louis lawyers who are pursuing this case. And anytime that happens, it's another point of friction for the league because they don't like this stuff to have the chance of getting out there.
So if you're a St. Louis Rams fan, what's the best case scenario with everything you just laid out? And it was well laid out, what you just said. And what's like the worst case scenario? What do you think is, you know, the St. Louis side, what are they looking for where it piques the interest of all of us as citizens of St. Louis? They go, yeah, you know what? I'm a Rams fan. I was, or I'm just a sports fan, or I'm just a St. Louis fan. I'm curious what this means. What's the best and what's the worst in this situation?
I mean, the worst case scenario is that this goes to trial and St. Louis loses, and that it gets nothing, and on top of getting nothing, it has to pay for the legal fees of the league and the teams that it sued. That's the worst case scenario. And that not only do you waste $16 million trying to keep your team, you then waste money on a lawsuit that blows up in your face. That's the absolute worst case scenario. The best case scenario, I think a lot of fans would say, Well, hey, they give us a team back. I don't think that's realistic. There's been nothing that suggests that that's the case. I know that's what a lot of people want. I think the most realistic best case scenario is that they go to trial, they win, and they win an absolute, pardon my French, crap ton of money. And then, of course, that would be appealed, and they'd have to try to fight it out in the appeals process. Another scenario is that there's a really big settlement, and I have not.
So when you say really big, what would that mean? Are we in the billions, or are we at millions? What do we got?
I think it would have to start with a B to be considered by these lawyers in St. Louis. Again, there's questions about where would that money go, and there's also questions about who would pay it. So Stan Kroenke signed an indemnification agreement with the league when the Rams moved. And I think, you know, there's some confusion as to what he's actually on the hook for. Is he on the hook for just the legal fees? Is he on the hook for whatever the settlement would be if there is one? But this is all premature, Dan. There's been, as I understand it right now, there has been no discussion about any sort of a settlement, that there is nothing moving on that front. All indications point toward this heading toward a trial, which will be in January of next year. So coming up here pretty soon. It got pushed back because of the pandemic.
Absolutely. I mean, it's fascinating to see what could happen. And then let's also give fans that are listening to this and read you in the Post-Dispatch this morning kind of the timeline. What's the timeline right now of all these things? So you said there's another hearing on the 25th. And then where do we go from there?
Well, there'll be the hearing on the summary judgment, which will be the 25th, and there's no guarantee that the judge will decide yes or no in that hearing, although he has at times ruled from the bench, which has been a good thing for the St. Louis side, because usually when he does that, he's agreeing with their arguments. I would not be shocked if he does that on the 25th and says there's no way this case is getting tossed. He actually expressed some frustration on Wednesday. He called it kind of Groundhog Day. He's tired of every... understandably tired of every hearing involved in this case, resorting to the lawyers for Stan Kroenke and the league, basically making their case as to why this lawsuit shouldn't happen. But it is happening. And they tried to turn every single hearing into the same discussion as to why none of this should be happening. But that's actually just slowing things down. And that's what a good defense team does, Dan. They pull every lever and try to exit every off ramp, and they appeal, and they ask for reconsiderations, and they draw things out, and they don't give documents until the very end. They very have to, and that's kind of delay. That's how Stan Kroenke handles a lot of his lawsuits, and that's the playbook we're seeing here. So immediate timeline is the 25th, the hearing. There will be a hearing after that, I would imagine, on this request for a venue change. And then we will see. I mean, each hearing has a chance to spin off into other motions, and every time there's a motion, you get a couple motions filed, and all of a sudden there's a hearing on one of those. So right now the dates we know are August 25th. There will be a hearing about the request of venue change at some point. And then the biggest one on the schedule, of course, is the jury trial in January. But there are a lot that will have to be done before that comes. You have to select a jury, which you can imagine how difficult that could be, deciding who is going to be a fair and unbiased person for the jury panel. I mean, there are a lot of scorned Rams fans. You can't have those people, on your jury. So there's a lot of backdating that comes from that January trial that we're going to be getting into here pretty soon.
Well, the Cardinals go into Kansas City having won three straight against a team that is, let's just say, offensively challenged in Pittsburgh. So they win three, but how do you feel about this team? It's the first time to be two games above 500 since early June, I believe. So, you know what? You did what you're supposed to do. You won in Pittsburgh. How do you feel about the team going into Kansas City?
I think they got to keep doing what they did in Pittsburgh. I thought it was a disappointing series against the Royals that they had at home. I know that's a tough judgment, but when you don't sweep a team you should sweep, and your back's against the wall, then it's not very good. They did take care of business against Pittsburgh, kind of a tough one to win on, because you lose maybe Wade LeBlanc and Carlson's banged up. So we'll see how much if that win was really a loss. But if they're going to have a chance of making anything interesting, Dan, they got to keep stacking up wins. They have to sweep bad teams, and the Pirates are a bad team, and also the Royals are a bad team. So they need to make up the one they get away at Busch Stadium against Kansas City. The problem, Dan, is every time they win, so do the Brewers. It's like they're connected. You know, it's every time the Cardinals have a chance to take a step forward, the Brewers find a way to win too. They won like four in a row.
Well, the other thing that stands out to me was a couple of nights ago, and Adam Wainwright.
Man.
I'll tell you what, Ben. I've said this, and I'll say it to you on our podcast. I've enjoyed watching him pitch more this year than I ever have. And I've been saying that now for, and you've heard me on the air say that, you know, for probably a good month or so. But the other night, he was just magnificent, man. It's just remarkable to see what he's doing.
Yeah, and I loved your, I caught a couple of your comments on the radio on Thursday, and you made a great point of, you know, he's not, it's the art that the game has lost, and he's not out there trying to do too much. He's simply doing what he can do, and he's doing it with intensity and precision. He is the definition of what this team has to have to win. A guy who plays to his defense, who throws a ton of strikes, doesn't walk guys. And it's just been, to me, a reminder of what this team, if it would have had more of that, where might they be? The numbers on him this season are amazing. What he's done since Jack Flaherty got hurt is even more amazing. I'm with you, man. Like, I think, Ricky Horton always says that line, and it's great about, you know, there are guys who play to prove their critics wrong or to play to quiet their haters. But then there are guys who play because they're good at it and they love the game and they love competition. And I think Adam has got to that point where he's not playing to prove wrong the people who doubted him, and he's not looking to silence anyone. He's just enjoying competing at a high level. He feels good. He has nothing left to prove, but he feels good doing it, and he's doing it well, so he's going to go out and do his thing. And that is incredibly fun to watch. It was fun to watch Yadi catch him. They just looked like they were on another level. And, yeah, it's not the most potent lineup, but, my God, for him to be able to do that, and I don't even mean at that age because I'm so tired of hearing that. Like, he's not pitching well for his age, Dan. He's pitching well for anybody, period. This guy's been this team's best player for the past 2 years, and you're totally right. It's fun to watch, and I just hope that he's convinced himself he wants to come back, man. I would love to see this for another year, and I think he and Yadi both deserve a chance to, if they're going to have their final go-around, I hope they get it to have a, I hope they get to have the chance of doing it with a more competitive, more playoff-ready team.
I you know what, though? I feel like for both, it's up to them whether or not they want to come back. That's obvious.
Does part of you feel like he might have his mind made up one way or the other already? I mean, we've asked him, and he said decided. But I hope that we're not seeing a guy who's decided he's going to hang it up and he's just letting it rip until then. But I wouldn't be shocked. But I hope that's not the case.
Well, the cool part about it is that if it is indeed the last run for Waino, he goes out on his own, you know, terms.
Totally.
And I think that's really cool about it.
Yeah, there's something to be said for leaving them wanting more, right? And again, I hope he's back because I think they could use him first and foremost. But if it is the end of the line and he's ready to hang out with his girls, understandably, and maybe do some of what you do and call in some games, I think he'd be good at that too. If it is the final go, then what a way he's going out. And maybe. He gets home to have that talk with his family, and they tell him, hey, you're crazy. You've still got pitching left to do. We'll see. But he just seems totally at peace, man. It is truly a joy to watch him. And I think we're all pretty dang lucky to watch that guy pitch.
Okay, so here's a little shameless plug. But on Sunday night at 10:30, and by the way, sit back in your seat, Ben, because we have plenty more to go. But Sunday night at 10:30 on Fox 2, Scoops with Danny Mac, the TV show. My guest is David Freese, and it's an awesome interview. I'm telling you what, people are going to love hearing from David Freese. He's my only guest on Sunday night, 10:30 on Fox Channel 2. So the Cardinals go into Kansas City, off day on Monday. Then on Tuesday, they come home, and it's kind of like a welcoming back to the family for David Freese. I'm fired up for it, Ben. He's one of my favorite players, people I've ever been around. And I'm just fired up for it. I think it could be a really special night for fans.
I think the Cardinals and their fans are lucky to have him back in the fold here. I know that he wants to be involved, and you've talked about that a lot. About he, you know, I think the alumni group does a great job of keeping these guys close, but not pressuring them. And he's clearly ready to dive back in, and hell, they'll have him at every fantasy camp. You know, he still looks like he's about 25.
So. Oh, he wants to go to fantasy camp, by the way.
But I'm kind of starting to think they maybe should find a place for him in a more official role.
I'm with you. By the way, the official role for me would be one of the 26 that are on your roster, because
I don't know that
the dude can hit, man. The dude can hit, especially when the money's on the line.
Yeah, a 1-year deal. It seems to be working out well for the Cardinals. I know that Yadi and Waino seem to be doing okay on those deals. Hey, if he wants to do that, then heck yeah, you got the DH to play with. He can play a bunch of different spots. I'd be all for it. I was thinking along the lines of some capacity with the hitting staff. The stuff he gives away on Twitter, he could charge for. Great combination of been there, done that knowledge of firsthand experience. But also, I think he's open to the modern trends. And, you know, he's had great hitting coaches. He's played for great teams. You know, he would resonate with guys in the clubhouse and in the dugout. And the Cardinals, you know, one thing we hear about the Cardinals is they're going to need to look at maybe getting somebody who can provide some been there, done that expertise in terms of the offense for this team moving forward. And, you know, I've been hard on Jeff Albert, but I won't ignore the fact that there are some impressive things happening in the minors with some of these guys who have kind of maybe figured out this way. But I do think one thing that might be missing from the mix is someone who kind of has some of that been there, done that in the dugout to balance it out a little bit. And whether it's Freeze or somebody else, I would have a hard time saying that you could find somebody much better than him in that role if he's open to it. Now, if he wants to play golf and throw out first pitches, and I totally get it. You know, he might not want that. And that's the other thing, is like, that's a huge job. It's a hard job. And having a guy who knows hitting does not mean that guy's ready to sign up for that grind either.
I'll be honest. I think that baseball takes a lot of black eyes. Some of them, you know, are deserved. Others are just, well, we're going to pile on baseball. But I thought last night during the Field of Dreams game that it was really well done. And you brought in a casual fan. And I just thought it was important for baseball. They put it on free TV. I think it's great. I think it's awesome for the sport. I don't know where you're at with this, but I just, you know, to me, it was a celebration of the sport.
I took a pot shot at the league for, you know, I want everybody who wants Danny Mac's dulcet tones on a streaming
I appreciate that.
All the time to be able to hear, but we won't get into that. I agree with you. It's a good event. They should do more of it. I think the Winter Classic that NHL does is brilliant. This is smart. Keep it going. I think continue to find ways to do this. And, you know, it's the photos of it, the imagery, outstanding. I just wish they would have done it on the Sandlot field instead of Field of Dreams.
Oh my gosh!
Have a big dog roaming around the outfield.
Yeah, that'd have been great. Yeah, barking over the fence. Yeah, I got it. Yeah. I got to wrap it up with this. Mizzou has a new AD. So why did they go out and get this young lady to come in and be the new AD? And number two, just your thoughts on what she can do to take Mizzou to another level. That's why you get an AD. That's why you make this move, is to get to another level. So why, and what can she do?
Sure. Well, it was very clear in Moon Choi, the president of Mizzou's, comments that this was not a simple retirement for Jim Sterk. He was more or less fired. They might not call it that, but his comments, along with them paying out his 2 years of remaining salary, make it pretty clear to those who maybe thought differently. They decided they wanted to make an upgrade, but they didn't want to make an upgrade that cost them the $1.5 or $2 million that would cost them to go and grab a sitting SEC AD. So they looked for the next up-and-coming SEC AD, and I think that they feel like they found it in Desiree Reed-Francois for a few different reasons, Dan. She has checked some major boxes. She has ran a football program at Virginia Tech. She's overseen a men's basketball team at Tennessee. She's been in charge of fundraising and development. She has been a sitting AD at a school that's hard to get much done. I've spent time in Las Vegas, and you cannot find someone who cares about UNLV football out there. She was able to upgrade the facilities there. She made a basketball coach hire that got poached by Iowa State. Three of her coaches, I think, won Mountain West Coach of the Year. She's a dynamic, engaging personality. She's a good mix of determined She holds people accountable. She's not afraid to fire somebody, but she's also human, and she has maybe some compassion that some of the other ADs lack. She's got a relationship with Konzo Martin. She helped hire him at Tennessee. There's a lot going there and a lot of reasons that I think when they interviewed her last Sunday in St. Louis, they felt like they couldn't get too far down their list or they might not get her. And I think they felt like they had to make the move. There is a component to this of if it's a historic hire, Mizzou's first woman athletics director, but that's not why she was hired. And I thought her answer to that question in Columbia was great. She said, I look forward to when that's not a question that I have to be asked about, but I'm not, you know, I'm here because I'm qualified. It's not because we were checking a box. And I think she's right. The more people I've talked to, the more I've been impressed. One thing that jumped out to me when I was talking to Mike Hamilton, the former Tennessee athletic director who actually hired Desiree Reed-Francois for her first job in the SEC, he told me that that she does not wear, you know, the time she's been passed over because she's a woman in this field as something she's angry about. She used it as an opportunity to attack the things that were perceived to be weaknesses. They told her, you can't do that until you oversee a basketball team. She went and did it. And she just continued to do that till I think it reminds me of kind of the Kim Ng situation, you know, where the Marlins hired her, then everybody comes out of the woodwork and said, man, more teams should have done this sooner. And that's kind of the descriptions you get with Desiree Reed-Francois. And the one thing that I'll end on is this. I did not know this before I talked to Mike Hamilton. Shortly after her time at UNLV, she called up Nick Saban and said, hey, I want to come down and observe your football team. I want to be around you and be on the practice field. I want to see what it takes to have a team that operates in a championship winning manner. And he said, come on down. So I think that's kind of the energy, the enthusiasm that Mizzou's looking to have. And I hope that folks give her a chance because I think she's going to be pretty impressive.
What about Eli Drinkwitz? Where's he with this?
I think he's good. He'd met her before. Her son's going to walk on at, for the Mizzou basketball team. So they had been in town to kind of check out the campus, and they had met before. I didn't think they had, but they have. And I think they've got to click right away. And I think they've got to get on the same bus there. That's really the main thing. Her number one priority is to keep Eli happy and to keep that momentum rolling. So I don't know that he was beating the drum for her. I know Konzo was advocating for her hire, but I don't think Eli knew her as well. But they got to figure out how to get on the same page and how to get you know, some true fusion going, because it's a pretty big season for Mizzou coming up, Dan, for a lot of reasons. You know, if Missouri wants to keep its head above water in this bigger, badder SEC that's coming, they need to take a big step forward this season.
No doubt. Hey, buddy, great stuff. Love the article today, informing fans on what's happening with the lawsuit with the city and the NFL and the St. Louis Rams. And I'll wrap it up with this. What else are you working on this weekend?
Oh man, I got to figure out what I'm writing. Probably some college football and might do some baseball at large stuff too. And we'll always have something covered. We'll have full coverage of the Cardinals in KC. And Dave is cranking it out from a Missouri football practice at stltoday.com too. So there'll be something to read at STL Today.
Always is. Hey, buddy, thanks. Catch up next week.
Have a good weekend, brother. See
you. All right, you too. That's Ben Fredrickson. And as always, we are brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. Find out more at bluetailmedicalgroup.com.